You're listening to WWBC Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. Our frequencies are AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and all over God's magnificent planet, Miss Ellen.
That's right, all over the World Wide Web. You can hit that 1510wwbc.com and you can select the Listen Live button and get us on any one of your listening devices. Or if you'd like an archive of the show, it's there at that same website, 1510wwbc.com. You can choose by date. Or you can go to any one of our social media channels, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, or our website, SitaMediaInc.com, and you'll be able to get all of our shows and pictures and little commentaries and all kinds of cool stuff.
Everything.
Everything.
This year.
And search by what makes you feel good.
Right. That's right. So on Mondays from 1 to 2... actually for the past 14 years, going on 15 years, Ellen O'Neill and myself have sat here and we have co-hosted this show called Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And then, of course, Ali Tambor, our resident intern, joined us and she's our guest every week.
That's right.
And it's been a blast. And we have Samantha that helps us with social media at times when she's free. And we heat up the airwaves here, right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We talk about things and issues that are going on right here in Brevard County, Florida. We speak about things going on within our state, nationally, and around the world. And we have quite an international audience as well. We had somebody just called in from, was it Kenya the other day?
We've had South Africa, we've had the UK, we've had Ireland, we've had, as a matter of fact, our downloads, we're up to about 18,000 downloads per week. And all over the world, people are downloading the show. So it's a tribute to you, Sita, and your international influence.
I think it's God's gift to give me that gift to be energized to do stuff like this, right? And I try to tell people all the time, our show is fun. It's entertainment to some degree. Sometimes we have a lot of fun. It's very interesting, and we give out a lot of valuable information, whether people want to open a bank account, whether they want to save, whether they want to learn about financial literacy. Some people want to learn about the environment. Others want to write a book. Some want to sell a book.
Start a business.
Vote. Very important. Yeah. Women's rights. Should you have a child? When you should have a child? Can you feed it? Number one. Can you house it? Can you clothe it? Right? These things. We talk about stuff, and it's everyday things that people talk about around their kitchen table. Right? Kitchen table topics. And today's no difference. As you know, Ellen, we've been drawing a lot of people that they are drawn to our show because we showcase a lot of authors and writers, just like yourself and myself. And today is no different. We have a repeat guest and a friend. Mr. Casey Coors is going to be talking the second segment about his literary biography of Walter Tevis. And for those of you who don't know who Walter Tevis is, it's a good time to look him up. He is the author of The Queen's Gambit. And I am going to let our friend Casey say hello to our audience before we chat about the first segment.
Good afternoon, everyone out there. Good afternoon, Sita and friends here. And I'm thrilled to be here this afternoon, live in studio.
Yes.
Right. All the way from Orlando.
Right. That's right. And your book is called Celebration of Words. But I think sometimes I feel like we should celebrate you, Mr. Casey Coors, for giving all of us the inspiration to continue reading, the inspiration and the motivation to learn more about who is behind the cover of the book. And I thank you for that. I wish there were more people like you who are showcasing not just the story, but who wrote the story and why the person wrote the story.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
And so, Ellen, our first segment, our friend Sumi Mukherjee, who wrote the book Life Interrupted, he's going to be calling in a little bit. That's probably him now. You know, Sumi had spoken to us before about his book, but we had a person who was supposed to come on today, and that person is going to reschedule. And I'm like, you know what? We've had, ever since Danny here said he will chain us down to the studio in case we wanted to leave, I'm like, oh boy, we have to find more guests to call in and more people to help sponsor the airtime. And so Sumi was on Facebook, and I saw he had just attended a writer's forum. And I said, you know, I should ask him if he wants to come on. And sure enough, he does. And we've been correspondent over the years as well. He's my Indian son that lives somewhere in Minnesota, Michigan. We'll figure it out. I always forget the state. But anyway, so, yeah, we've had a lot of people that want to call in and come on the show and keep us on air, which is wonderful, right?
Absolutely. And after 15 years, we have such a great following and such a community strength here in Brevard County that the national news and all of the international news, it's great to be able to share all that here on community radio.
Well, life is like a circle, right? God gives you what you could handle. And we do a little bit of everything. And we're able to talk to people in simple terms and humble ourselves and get our voices heard, no matter what it is. And I like to say it's almost like having the experience of having 18 brothers and sisters. I can talk about just about any topic.
There you go. Yeah, for sure.
Right, Allie, what do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And you just went on a cruise and you had a good time?
Oh, we met lots of people. Never was shy about talking to any of them. You just sort of fake it till you make it. Look surprised at things that they say, and then they'll keep talking, and then you'll have some you can intervene with stuff. It's wonderful. Lots of great people.
Right. And Ellen, you just finished singing this weekend. You're doing well with that?
Yes. We've had this season was probably the busiest party season that we've ever had.
And you were in Sebastian this weekend.
We were in Mico, yep, in Grant. And that mostly down there this whole weekend. But it's been fantastic. And to see so many people out and enjoying each other, and, you know, whether you fellowship at church or whether you fellowship out at a, you know, live music venue.
Or you work as a nurse in the nursing home.
Or you work as a nurse in the nursing home. We meet everybody.
Well, right? I want everybody's input really quick for 30 seconds about this before we go to Sumi. He's on the phone, and I know he's ready to talk. The train, 2 accidents, same spot, 4 accidents. Don't you think by now people should listen and pay attention to the rules of the road? If the arms are down, the guardrails are down, and the train is coming, and it's hooting and hollering, why are you trying to beat a train?
So something is telling me that train might be going too fast for the time that the arms come down. Because I've heard it twice
now. But what does that have to do with the guy who went around the rail?
I'm not saying that people haven't been being silly about it. But what I'm saying is they don't realize the magnitude of how fast that train is going.
I see that train every day on the way home because I have to take a left on Lake Washington Road. Right. There are lights flashing. There's 2 arms down. There are people stopped. This dude went around the car that was stopped.
I know.
So he could go on. Where was he going? Yeah. Number one, why is the world in such a hurry? Retirement is coming, whether you like it or not, right?
There you go.
It's coming. There you go. Relax. Slow down, everybody.
But I don't know that this wasn't unexpected because the concern about how fast the train was going through town has been a concern since before the train even started. So I think people were anticipating that things like this were going to happen, but now we got to come up with some solution.
You'll have to read about that. I don't know if you read about it. You seem lost over there. But 2 people died a couple days ago.
Yeah.
And then before that, the year before that, there was another accident. One died and 2 went in the hospital. But anyway, so Sumi Mukherjee, which I could say his name very well, is a professional public speaker and author with Marfa House. He's self-employed. He gives public speeches and he does a lot of stuff. He's writing his 3rd book and he's on the phone calling in from, I believe it's Minnesota. Right, Sumi?
It is Minnesota, yes. And just for the record, we are below 0 today.
Wow.
Well, we're sorry we said sunny Cocoa, Florida.
Below 0, I was a golf score.
I'm there mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, so.
So, Sumi, bring us up to speed about what's going on with you. We know that you have been speaking with teachers and counselors and administrators and social workers, and you've been speaking about mental health and racial healing and all the stuff that's in your book. Bring us up to speed about what you're doing and how, and let our listening audience on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends catch up with what's happening.
Well, yes, I've been doing all of that, and most notably, just this weekend, I attended a conference, the IAM conference, which is the India Association of Minnesota. And that was just an absolutely phenomenal experience. IAM has been around since 1973, so that's been 50 years. And as part of the 50 years anniversary celebration, they put together an inaugural literary showcase featuring South Asian Minnesota authors. So that was pretty great. I haven't been involved in the past, but over the last 5 years, I've come to know more about the association, the wonderful work they've been doing. In the past few years, I worked with two of their directors, Vineet Pandey and Soyali Amarapurkar. They've both been absolutely wonderful to work on Saturday. I also met another director, Shruti Joshi, who did an absolutely wonderful job on Saturday in leading the literary showcase. What can I say? I'm really impressed with what they've been doing, and the greatest thing is I'm now planning to join the association soon as an official member.
Well, you know, like I was saying to you earlier today, Sumi, and you know, it's so good to have the technology that we all enjoy with, you know, streaming services and cable and texting and Zoom and LinkedIn and all the social media platforms. But nothing beats meeting people face-to-face and talking and looking somebody in the eye and making that contact. And I think that's what you did this weekend. You were able to sit down with live human beings and tune out all the other things. Because I'm an old-fashioned person, and so is Casey, right? We all are. We like that human touch. And that's what you did this weekend.
Yeah, that's absolutely essential, and this is the best event I've actually done since COVID came along and took away exactly what you described, that in-person personal touch that I don't think could ever be replaced.
Yeah, but you know, nowadays everybody wants to become a TikTok star, or they want to, you know, get a million views on something, and they're not thinking that it's a human connection that actually helps a lot of us, especially authors, the expressions or stories or experiences. When it's live, it's animated, it's so much better than when you are on an online platform. So tell us, what was the conference about, and why did they have why did they host it?
Basically, it was part of the 50 year anniversary celebration of IAM that's been around since 73. So it was an inaugural literary showcase, and featuring the South Asian Minnesota authors, and I was one of the privileged few that got to be on a panel that sat on stage. There were also tables set up for each author to display their books and other related material. A lot of time available for attendees to walk around and chat with the South Asian authors, which was really my favorite part, where people would just come up to me and, you know, share things and express an interest. You know, what are your books about? And I have four books I've written and published that I have on Amazon. So people would come up and ask about, you know, these are all nonfiction, real life experiences. You know, how were you involved in each of these things? You know, what is, they're vastly different subject matters. So it was a wonderful experience just having people come up and show an interest and realizing that there's a venue for South Asian Minnesota authors to express their art and their work.
Was there a fee for speaking? I mean, did they charge you, or did you have to pay to be a part of it?
Oh, no. We did not have to do that, no.
Yeah. And some of and the discussions, I would imagine, you being Indian but born in Canada, moved to the United States, and having experienced so many things that you discussed in your book, with racism and bigotry and class and these kind of things. Was your discussion about that, or was it about your book?
It was. It touched on all of the above, yeah. It was about the book, and it was about my books, and it was about the racism element definitely came up, and because that is something that in Minnesota is relevant to us who are non-white ethnic minority in the state. And also just to discuss about my book, questions about being an author, what it takes to write a book, writer's block, editing, all these questions about kind of reaching out to the crowd to see all the future authors that were sitting in the crowd, because there was about 15 to 20 South Asian authors in the audience of about 200.
Oh, that's a good turnout. Yeah. So
it's an amazing turnout considering how cold it is here, you guys. I mean, we were getting pretty spoiled. I mean, December and the first one-third of January were pretty warm and cold and snow-free, but now it's below zero. So, yeah, I was very concerned maybe few people would show up, but no, there was a huge turnout, so it was great.
Well, you know what, too? Oftentimes I've met people from Minnesota, and they'll say, oh, we don't like to hug. So I'm wondering, in such a cold place, you would think people would be huggers. Did you find that people in the audience, were they huggers, or were they like shake their hand? What kind of people were they?
I think it was a mixture of both, to be honest. Yeah.
Oh, good, good. And so tell us, you've written quite a few books, and you've spoken about so many issues. Which ones of you of the books? Which book did people like? And what kind of interest did they have in the books?
Well, I had, that's a good question. I had all four of my books displayed on my table, but the two that drew the most interest were Minority Viewpoint and A Life Interrupted. And basically, all those books that I had brought were gone by the end of the day. I mean, so that says something.
Of course.
The fact that I ran out of books and people were asking, and I said, I apologize, I ran out. You know, so that was a good thing. But I think people were also interested in my book about workplace bullying. I think the two that drew the most attention had to do with racial equality and acceptance of diversity. Clearly, the attendees had some significant interest in that area of acceptance of diversity, and that says something because, you know, this is Minnesota is a very, very predominantly Caucasian white majority, and I think the South Asian community in Minnesota, it's not something anyone ever enjoys bringing up or talking about, and oftentimes if we bring it up, we get accused of being falsely accused of being the ones who are dividing, and we're not dividing anybody, but I think we've all experienced racism. And it's something that how you deal with it in a positive, constructive manner is worth talking and writing about.
Right, it's all about coping, right? And life comes down to all about an education and how you communicate what you learn. And how you put it into action. So tell our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, Sumi Mukherjee, author, public speaker, coach, everything else. Tell our listening audience a little bit, give us a few minutes about Minority Report and Life Interrupted. Let's hear about those books.
Oh, certainly. Well, I'll start with Life Interrupted because that one came first. That was my first baby, I guess. And it was first self-published, and then eventually I found a publisher and was able to publish it a second time. That is my true story of growing up, having parents that grew up in another country, grew up in India, came to the United States. Through my dad's work, we ended up in the state of Minnesota, and I had to grow up as a brown Indian person in Minnesota. And some of the extremely harsh struggles I went through dealing with bullying, bullying that was bias-based, racially-based bullying, and having to overcome that. And more than that, the impact that had in contributing to a very severe, chronic, lifelong anxiety disorder, obsessive-compulsive disorder, and how I dealt with the cruel, cruel mixture of the bullying and the OCD, obsessive-compulsive disorder, also known as OCD, the mixture of the two of them and overcome both of them. And what it took to overcome both of them, and even though I've overcome them, I still deal with them every day.
Well, you know, when you called in on our show and you spoke about that, I had to go back in my memory bank and think about my children who went to Satellite High School. And my son would come home and tell me, You know, once somebody called him Haji Mart or something like that, and I would be like, oh, don't listen to them. Just suck it up. Just don't worry about it. You'll grow up and you'll become something in life. And now I think back, and you're right, you know, when people call minority children names or, you know, point to their forehead and ask him where's his dot and things like that, I sometimes think that maybe I was more like your parents, where I would kind of sweep it under the rug and say, you know, you live in the greatest country in the world, buck it up. But you opened my eyes that these things happen and they do have lifelong consequences if you don't deal with it and deal with the person that says something that hurts someone's feelings.
It's also more than, I mean, hurt feelings are terrible, but this has to do with a much bigger, much larger issue, age-old issue of racial discrimination. Being told that, being marginalized, being told that you are not one of us, you are not okay, you don't fit into this group, and you don't belong here. And very often it's, you know, go back to your country. And
a lot of Indian kids face that, I think, sometimes. A lot of Asian kids, too, because you go to school... And you're like maybe a handful of brown children there. You're not black and you're not white. And you have to try to figure out which way, where do you belong? Do you belong with the group who's listening to hip hop? Or do you belong with the group that's listening to Rhinestone Cowboy? There ain't no Bollywood songs. Or do you belong with the group that's eating a sandwich? Or the groups that eating ribs? Because you don't eat beef, you don't eat pork. And so then you've got, you know, I find it was a very, very difficult for my children. But, you know, I like to say America is a melting pot and everybody learns from each other. But there were instances when people did say something about the children being brown or something, you know. And I feel for you and I'm sorry that that happened to you. And I also, I told my children sorry when you called in as well. But you've moved on and you still have issues with it. But tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Seton and Friends, how did you move on and how did it help you?
The bad things that happen in our life, it really helped if we can try to say that those things happened for a reason. Even if there isn't actually a good reason for why they happened, if we can give them a good reason for happening. And I think it made me the person I am today, and I think I'm probably 50 times a better person for having gone through it. And developed and learned about compassion and accepting other people that are different, are people that have, people that are different from me, and accepting people that are, for example, you know, the LGBTQ community. I've been much more accepting of them than most people because I realized that just like me, they're seen as a minority. And they're just like everybody else, just like I'm like everybody else.
But, you know, even within the Indian community, we have colorism. We've got the lighter skin versus the darker skin.
Yep.
So we've absolutely got our own inequalities built into our culture, which I face as a child because I'm a dark-skinned Indian girl. So it's not like no culture is perfect, right? And we all have to work through it.
Very true. I think the fact is human nature is flawed. And it's like human beings will always find a way, find something to argue about, find something to... differentiate each other from one another, and I think that really is something that gives us grounds to say that, hey, we're really all more alike than we are different, and here's why that's the case, and to kind of express that to everybody, I think.
Right. And which was the other book that the attendees were interested in?
The other one was Minority Viewpoint, which is called Minority Viewpoint, My Experience as a Person of Color with the American Justice System, and that was a riveting story about an incident I experienced in a small, very tiny, white northern Minnesota town, and the ramifications that had on my life for many years to come. And it was literally Minority Viewpoint, the viewpoint of a minority person. And I think a lot of people in the Indian community, don't necessarily like to be very vocal and speak out when and to call people out, call wrongdoers out who are, you know, part of the majority, the Caucasian white majority, who are, you know, exhibiting racism towards us. I think a lot of Indian people are very good-natured and don't like to, you know, ruffle feathers and call that out, but I called that out. And I did it in a respectful, appropriate, dignified way, and I think that resonated with a lot of people.
Well, you know, I think it's because, being an Indian woman myself who immigrated to this great country, I think it's because a lot of us view immigrating to this land as a gift.
Yes,
and that's why we don't like to ruffle the feathers. That's why, like, you know, you take it. You just take it and you hope and you cope, you know, because we don't want, a lot of us, frankly, don't want to be sent back home. And you're afraid that if you say something, they might say, I'm going to revoke your naturalization certificate. And I'll be honest, maybe that's one of the reasons why people do like Indians, because we're very quiet and passive people. You're deathly afraid for your children to get into problems with the law. You're afraid to get in problem. So you toe the line. You tell them, go to school, become a lawyer, doctor, engineer, open a business, or else. Isn't that the truth?
Right. That's a very, very valid point that I think a lot of, that's a very good reason as to why it's seen as a gift and a privilege to be here, and people don't want to ruffle feathers, and generally the Indian people are very grateful, like you said, grateful, peaceful, quiet people, humble people, and I think at the same time, a healthy assertion of our rights is also a good thing.
Yeah. So overall, what was your impression of the IAM conference? And I'm sure you observed a lot of things while you were there. Were you able to speak freely? And did you feel like it made an impression on yourself and the people who were there?
I think it was the most wonderful event I've attended probably in the last decade, and the most wonderful event I've attended since COVID shut everything down and shut a lot of what I was doing down, which was traveling all over the country, giving talks about my books and about these issues, these critical issues, as well as preventing sexual abuse of kids, standing up for your rights at the workplace, and so on and so forth. This was just an amazing conference, and it was coordinated so well. It was run so well by everybody in charge of IAM, and my only regret is that I have not already been an official member of IAM, which I'm going to join now.
Right. Well, you know what it is. You were with your tribe. There's something about being with people who are like-minded. Like, I feel good when I'm with people from the Caribbean. I feel good with Americans. I feel good with Indians. I kind of fit in with every single group on the planet. But there's something about when you feel like you belong, that people like you, like they want you to be there. And I sense that they enjoyed hearing about your books and they enjoyed meeting you as well.
Yes, and that was very, very much the case. And all I can say is the feeling was 150% mutual. I met so many wonderful, amazing, creative, intelligent, bright people that day that I, the rest of the day, I didn't even feel the cold.
Oh, how sweet. Well, give us your website if someone wanted to get one of your books or learn a little bit about IAM or maybe join. There's Indian authors now popping up all over the place. And I have to tell you, a lot of Indians are now on TikTok making so many funny videos about exactly what we do to our children. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Like they have taken like everything, like I would tell my kids, you know, at 6 o'clock in the morning when everybody's sleeping, you wake them up with a broom, make a noise, or a vacuum. And now people are making all these videos. Here's my mom at 6 o'clock on a Sunday morning, and you hear a vacuum turning on, you know. And I'm like, I'm like, that's us, you know. So give us your website.
Oh, yes. People, we have to be careful now. Can't get away with that stuff anymore because the kids can just put it on social media. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, my website is authorsumi.com. Just A-U-T-H-O-R, author, S as in Sam, U-M-I, authorsumi.com. And everything's available on there.
Well, keep doing what you're doing, my friend. You're young and energetic, and you have a lot to offer to the world. And no matter what happened to you with the bullying and all that, you will be left standing and people will respect you. I think it's all right to spread the word that God made all of us, no matter what race, what religion, what color. And once we get an education and we know who we are and we know where we're going, we are supposed to spread that message and pull somebody up so that another dark-skinned Indian girl or another Sumi going to an all-white school would have a chance to say, hey, I belong. I belong right here. So look at me, and you do it with pride.
And as hard, absolutely correct, and as hard as it is for me to accept this, I think I need to continue. It's a work in progress. Continue to accept that I'm grateful for everything I went through, everything bad, because it made me who I am today.
Okay, well, Ellen, we'll take it away from here. Thank you, my friend. I'll keep in touch with you. And when you come to Melbourne, Florida, don't forget to look us up. preferably on a Monday where you could come in person on the show.
There you go.
That'll be wonderful. Thank you all so much.
We'll make sure we share all of this on our Viewpoint with CETA and Friends page on all of our social medias, as well as our website, CETAMediaInc.com. But for right now, we're going to take a quick minute to listen to our sponsors, and we will be right back with Casey Cowers.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture.
Welcome to MedFast Urgent Care. We are Brevard County's largest urgent care network. MedFast is now open at 7:30 a.m. every day. That's right, 7:30 a.m. every day. We will get you in and out so you can get back to your day. When you are sick or injured, MedFast is here for you 7 days a week. Think fast, think MedFast. With 18 locations, there's a MedFast near you. Call 321-MEDFAST.
Are you longing for a taste of Louisiana? Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan, and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Dine in or take out as well as outside seating. Live music on selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro, 2447 North Wickham Road.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads. 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000. Or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com.
Jotkoff Financial Group.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is CETA Biggie on Viewpoint with CETA and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We're heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere.
That's right, on www.1510wwbc.com. You can hit that listen live button, get us on any one of your listening devices. And then, of course, all of the downloads and archives are there as well. We share them on all of our social media channels, Viewpoint with CETA and Friends, and CETAMediaInc.com.
Right. And for our listeners who are just tuning in today, we actually have a show going on the break. I'm sure people would love to hear a show on the break. It's actually a lot of fun.
We'll have to video the whole thing one time.
You know what it is? Freedom of speech comes with a responsibility, right? And we do try to do that, observe that on this show. But it's also a lot of fun to meet such wonderful people. And one of those people in our office, listen to me, like I'm upstairs in my office. Next thing I'll say, the nursing home. Our friend Casey Coors is here. And, woo-hoo. You know, not often you find an author that actually wrote about another author, right? And his book is called, so many books he's written, but the one that we all love is called Chasing the Queen's Gambit. So, Casey, welcome back to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, retired English teacher, retired Wall Street guy, stockbroker, husband, everything. You've done a lot of stuff, and you are a celebration, my friend. So talk to us a little bit about your 66 years on planet Earth.
Thank you.
That wasn't necessary.
Well, he says it in his interview. He tells people how old he is. And I'm like, I like this guy because he is enjoying his gift on being on this planet.
That's right. Well, first of all, Sita, thank you for having me back. And it's great to see everybody here. And thank you for everything you do for the community in Brevard County. And I live in Orlando. I am a retired teacher. And I was given a couple of gifts when I was a kid. I believe they were gifts from God. And one of them was an appreciation for books. And I've been unnaturally attracted to books since I was a young kid. Comic books, and then adventure stories, sports stories, and then eventually into novels. And that led me onto Wall Street and then into a career teaching. So I do enjoy each and every day. And I do think it's kind of a miracle to survive to 66 and be healthy and enjoying my life. And so I love the longevity. I refer to it as longevity a little more than aging, but that's the older I get, the more I like the word longevity. So.
And don't you find, Casey, as we grow older, we do get bolder and wiser?
Yes.
I think I do, and it for you too, and it's experience, right? Because like Sumi just said, everything bad that happens, somehow or the other, it's a life lesson.
Yes, and this book, Chasing the Queen's Gambit, this was a gift. I started this book about 38 or 40 years ago, and I can look back now and see very clearly how faith played a role in this book. And I started down this path with Walter Tevis, who wrote a very famous movie called The Hustler, a book called The Hustler. And then he did a book turned into a movie called The Man Who Fell to Earth with David Bowie. And then he drank for 16 years and was a university professor. Then at the age of 50, he sobered up, moved to New York, and wrote five books in 5 years. The last two books, in 1983, he wrote The Queen's Gambit, and in 1984, he wrote The Color of Money.
And that's also a movie.
And that's also a movie.
Yeah.
So he wrote six novels, and five of them had been adapted into major films. And in the early 90s, I was standing in a Blockbuster video store, and I could get the video, the VCR, of The Hustler, The Man Who Fell to Earth, or The Color of Money in 1992. Well, you know, when as a writer, you look at a rhetorical triangle. I'm the author. The topic is Walter Tevis. Who's my audience? In 1990, the audience were people that knew Paul Newman and The Hustler. Well, 20, 25, 30 years go by. I'm sitting at home during the pandemic, October of 2020, and I watched the Netflix series, The Queen's Gambit, and it knocked my socks off. I had no idea that this series was in production, nor for a long time did Walter's children. Okay, so when it hit in October of 2020, it created a phenomena around the world. And so as I say a lot, my wife Sharon, I looked at her that night and I said, my life's going to change, because I am the world's foremost authority on Walter Tevis, and that was worth about 25 cents up until The Queen's Gambit was released.
And of all the authors, right, because you also interviewed Michael Connelly as well. And we all know about his book.
Right.
Right. Of all the authors, why Mr. Tevis?
Well,
because there's so many other ones, right?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And you and I are friends, and I personally went through a problem of drinking too much when I was in my early 20s, and I stopped when I was 26.
Well, thank God, and we applaud you for that.
Yeah, thank you. It is the grace of God. But I discovered Walter Tevis's writing at that exact time in 1984. And Walter was always, it was a role model for me to look up to. It was a redemption story of someone who fell into He wrote a book called The Man Who Fell to Earth, which he described as his descent into alcoholism. And then he wrote a book in 1980 called Mockingbird, which he called his ascent out of alcoholism. And so the 16 years were spent being a professor at a high university, which was close to where I lived. So I latched on to it, but I'm an obsessive person. If I develop, I don't do anything in moderation. Okay, so I kept this book on the back burner for all of those years, and then I believe it was, I was ready to retire, and I believe the hand of God moved, and I ended up getting a call from PBS saying, we want to do a documentary on the life of Walter Tevis and his two kids. Will and Julie said, there's only one person that you can talk to about our dad's life. His name's Casey Coar.
Yeah, but you know more about him than his children does.
I did, and yeah. His daughter told me that. So it was just, I was ready. It was a good time in my life to write it. And as a writer, you can't chase a topic. Yeah, you can't. I can't write about something that's going on today because it's going to take me 2 years to write a book. So, you know, I thought, you know, I'm writing a book about Michael Conley right now because I've seen the advantage of, if I would have had this book out, a biography on Walter Tevis, when the Queen's Gambit came out, I would have sold a lot of copies, okay? But the only problem was nobody wanted to read it, and the Queen's Gambit hadn't been done yet.
Right, Netflix changed everything, right?
And I knew both of Walter's.
And the Lincoln lawyer, though, Michael Connelly, died. We all know about that one.
Right.
Oh, I could just see that car taking off.
Yeah. And so with Walter, what I'm happiest about was, you know, I'm 66. Walter died in 1984. And so I was very aware of my own mortality, and I wanted to finish this book while I was alive so that I could tell Walter's story and hopefully people wake up in a funk or a spiritual haze and they watch.
So
the
you're giving
Gambit.
People hope. You're giving people hope because he had his ups and downs in life with so
and he
many,
ended on an up.
Right, and a lot of depression, alcoholism, and things like that, which normal people go through right now.
Yes, it's a very universal story, and I think when the Queen's Gambit hit, it was the perfect storm. It was COVID. People were locked up in their house. But the one thing the Queen's Gambit did is it was excellent in every respect, from the acting to the costumes to the music. It was a work of genius, I believe. And I know that Walter would have loved the adaptation. But it was one of the great surprises of my life, really, has been the to be able to sit down and write this book and publish it and bring the focus on Walter Tevis where it should be.
And where did you find the time to write? Because you've been teaching for 15 years.
Yeah, I'm an international traveler too. I love to travel, and I have a wife that's very supportive of what I was doing. And I would teach, and over the summer I would go to Guatemala, Antigua, Guatemala, little village there, stayed at the same hotel. And I would go for 7 to 10 days, and I would write 6 to 8 hours a day doing research and writing. I'm a very disciplined person, so I'm a hard worker.
Yeah, and how did you know what to write? Because there's so much research that you did into his life. How did you know what part goes in? I mean, I guess you had to do a lot of editing, too.
Yeah, I did. And that's where I think the grace comes through, is that I'm not smart enough to write this book, okay? Is this book kind of laid itself out, and I had several people read it along the way. Part of the challenge was the timeline, because people that watched The Hustler in 1961 as a movie, his daughter told me her children really didn't know The Hustler. You know, I mean, that their grandfather, you know. But the Queen's Gambit struck a chord with every lonely, nerdy person who's ever lived and been picked on at school. That's the audience for the Queen's Gambit. And I said, you know what? There's going to be a beautiful young girl in 20 years that's going to watch the Queen's Gambit feel exactly how Beth Harmon feels. And I wanted that student to be able to go back and read about Walter Tevis and what he went through, because the ultimate irony is that Beth Harmon, the protagonist of the Queen's Gambit, that was actually Walter Tevis.
I was just going to say, if you don't mind, my good friend Casey Coar, can you tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends a little bit about the Queen's Gambit, the series? Because a lot of people hear the name, but they haven't watched it.
Thank you for asking me that, because I went from the point to where nobody had ever heard of Walter Tevis, where now sometimes I almost assume that they know the Queen's Gambit.
Yes.
And the reason being is the obsession with chess that it created, and that has not slowed down. Chess, particularly among young girls in China,
India,
mm-hmm. you know, all over the world, these young girls, and they're playing on their devices, they're playing on their phones. I about 35 years ago, I used to teach second graders at an elementary school. I taught them chess because of the Queen's Gambit, and I found these kids in an inner city school. All you need to introduce this to a classroom is a chessboard and a math teacher that will explain how to play chess to them. And the principal of that school came to me and said, Casey, the kids are coming in at recess. They want to play chess now. And the girls are bringing their lunch in, and they want to play chess because there's a social aspect.
And it's discipline.
And discipline. And that's what I
and
like.
And that's what we want. All the schools should learn to play chess.
I agree. And so what it is that the kids are taking to it. And I think parents are saying, you know what? If my kid is playing with someone, they're playing chess, they're communicating, everybody wins. And who would have guessed that a story about what happened to Beth Harmon is she became an orphan at the age of 10, and she was put in the Methuen home where she was raised as an orphan and eventually adopted into a family, Mrs. Wheatley, who takes her in. And it's almost like a Thelma and Louise story with a daughter and a foster mother. But what happened to Walter, when Walter was 10, he had St. Vitus's dance, and it caused neurological damage. And when Walter was 10, he was put into the Stanford Hospital for a year and a half and isolated from the other kids.
So this story was always in his head.
This story is his life.
Yeah, that's his, yeah.
That's Walter.
Yeah, a lot of what's happened to Anne is him.
Yes, and so The Man Who Fell to Earth is about an alien from California who falls into the field in Kentucky, and everybody picks on him because he's tall and gangly and speaks like a kid
He's
different.
Yes.
So, The Man Who Fell to Earth, and then David Bowie captured that perfectly. So all of these themes are in Tevis's work, and I think his masterpiece was actually a book called Mockingbird, which is being adapted into a film now. But The Queen's Gambit will do as a great story of overcoming obstacles. And what Tevis wrote about, and this is what I love, is he argued, and I think on Dr. King's holiday, that what Walter said is true, is that the fact that Eddie Felsen was a pool player was inconsequential. Eddie wanted to be the best. It wasn't about winning. It was about being the best in the world.
Yeah. Okay.
And so and people were like, chess and pool, Paul Newman, it was a sex symbol, Tom Cruise and The Color of Money. So Walter had all of these stars. When I do keyword searches when I'm promoting the book, Paul Newman, David Bowie, I'm like, it's wonderful. Chess, The Queen's Gambit. And I just got lucky to be the person that took the time all those years ago.
That is
the
divine
research.
Intervention.
That's divine
intervention. And I'll tell you, of lately, on all social media platforms, everyone is talking about the chess player in India, the 18-year-old. And now his sister, I can't say their name. It starts with a P. Mm-hmm. That's all I know. But everyone is talking about them. But anyways, so you wrote the book, but then you just came back from a book launch in Jackson, Mississippi.
Yes.
Talk to us about that.
Okay. Well, this will be interesting, I think, it seems everybody wants to write a book, and during COVID, a lot of people did write books, and I think that's fantastic. The hard part is selling books, okay? So I published the book. I was here in May, and I published it in July, August, and I wanted to do a big launch at Lemuria Bookstore in Jackson, Mississippi, which I met one of my favorite authors there about 40 years ago. So I stayed in touch with the bookstore owner. I communicated with him, and when I did the launch, John Evans is his name, he welcomed me up to Jackson. We did the launch there. And then the big one I did was in Franklin, Tennessee at the Dickens Festival. I was invited to that in December, and that was just a great joy. And I want to, again, Sharon created this visual of Anya Taylor-Joy, who played Beth Harmon, playing chess. And people were walking through the streets in Franklin, Tennessee, and they would just stop and look at this beautiful piece of art that my wife did. And then I had a picture of Walter. That's Walter right there. And people stopped and came over and talked to me. And I was amazed at the power of visuals, but really amazed at the power of streaming services taking The Queen's Gambit to a level that the novel never would have achieved. And Michael Conley's the same way. Harry Bosch, Titus Welliver, the Lincoln Lawyer now. And, I interviewed Michael Conley in 2005 about the Lincoln Lawyer. 2005. Okay? They hadn't even cast.
And you're also the first person to have, I wouldn't say it's a podcast, because back then you used cassette tapes for your blog, right?
Yes, I did.
But and look at it. And you it's still there. You still have that site.
It's still there. And I'll tell you what's amazing is I recorded my first interview with Michael Conley on the Lincoln Lawyer.
On a cassette tape.
And it's still available on GoDaddy. as a broadband file, and people can still listen to it. And I have never invested another penny into the technology of my website. It's all GoDaddy, Microsoft, how their technology. So I haven't had to spend much money. My website's out of date, but you know what? I don't care. It's like you click on and you can listen to it. So yeah. So divine intervention, definitely, and hard work.
And Michael Connelly is probably one of my favorite authors. Mm-hmm. So even when the last time you were here, I believe it was in May, right?
That, yes.
Sometime in the spring.
Was, yes.
Right after that, I went and watched The Color of Money.
Yeah.
I went and like Googled everything, and then I was rereading some Michael Connelly books. And then of course the Reacher series came out, which
yes.
is kind of Connelly.
Yes.
And also yeah. the what's the other what Bosch.
Bosch.
That
yeah.
was the other one that came yeah. out. And my boyfriend is an avid reader and read all of Michael Connelly's books. Yeah. And so when we start watching these series on TV, he's like, I know what's going to happen next. I'm like, shut up. Shut up.
So do we expect a second season of The Queen's Gambit on Netflix, you think?
I hope not.
Yeah.
I hope not, because the story's complete. Beth Harmon wins the, no spoiler alert, everybody's watched it. She wins a world championship. And I hope they don't do a second season, because Beth Harmon shouldn't be a NASCAR driver or a female PGA golfer. Beth Harmon's should rest in peace, okay? Or rest in glory, I guess. So
go off on a bang not. Like he did.
Exactly.
Yeah, on a high note.
Yeah, we always, you know, we refuse to accept the fact that Kill a Mockingbird was a work of genius and that she had to write something else. No, not so, okay? Queen's Gambit, as far as I'm concerned, is done.
So on December 10th, something happened in Tennessee as well. Your book was chosen. But 38, number 38 annual?
Yeah,
this is
very Dickens Christmas. Again, this comes into, you know, networking and all of the terms that I hate, but I was at the Southern Festival of Book about a year and a half ago in Nashville, and I met the owner of Landmark Booksellers in Franklin, Tennessee, and I approached them after the book came out, and I talked to them. I said, I met you in Nashville, and I said, I'd like to do an event at your store, and they said, well, why don't you come during a Dickens Christmas? And they picked about 28 to 30 authors that they bring in.
They've been doing it
for 38 years. Yeah. And so I was featured this year as one of the Dickens authors, and I was promoting Chasing the Queen's Gambit. I sold a lot of books that day, and they kept, you know, like four copies for the store's inventory. So it was really exciting for me.
It's so wonderful that you've been on our show a few times, and when you do well, it feels like all of us
yes.
are doing well, right?
Yes.
And yeah, I mean, it's like, that's our friend. And then I read where the Queen's Gambit was also the finalist in the 21st Annual American Book Festival. People want to know about this guy.
Thank you.
And they want to know about Chasing the Queen's Gambit and why you wrote it.
See, I always appreciate professionals that do some of their research and before I get to a studio.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I self-published this book, and there's a contest called the American Book Festival where you send a check for $75 in your book into Los Angeles, right? And so to a post office box in L.A. Well, I sent it out in July or August, and I told my wife, you know, I think I just set fire to a $75 check, okay? But I just saw this book being dropped to some huge bin in L.A. that nobody ever looked at. Well, in November, I'm sitting there in the evening one day, and I found out that I was a finalist, one of the top five for the in the category of general biographies, and I came in second, actually. And,
well, so exciting.
And so that's the kind
like
of thing.
It feels like it's us, you know, because he's part
of
us.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is, because we're all part of the community, and, you know, I just love books, and I think the international, there's a lot of, not really the right term, internationalization of literature right now is really happening, and it's exciting to see Chinese authors. You know, this weekend I met Lisa C, heard her talk, Jamie Ford. So many, there's a lot of great things happening in literature. So when people tell me that literature's dead, I said, you might be dead, but literature's not.
Yeah, we are reviving it.
We are.
A lot of people will.
And
for
the
our listeners
cool part
who
about the Queen, Chasing Queen's Gambit too, as well, making it international, when you do it, when you publish on Amazon specifically,
yes.
it can be translated into
any language.
Any language.
Well, thank you. I sold three copies in the United Kingdom 2 weeks ago. Last week, I sold a copy in Canada. Well, they were bought by Amazon, delivered by Prime. So I had three people in the UK that are reading it now, one in Canada. And I got to tell you, as a retired teacher, it doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah,
that's so exciting.
For our listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we're talking about the book Chasing the Queen's Gambit. And we're speaking with author Casey Kors. You know, when I look at you and I read the book and I listen to what people are saying about the Queen's Gambit and the Netflix series, what is the fascination with playing chess? I know it's discipline, right? Well, and Ellen raised her hand. There's a fascination.
Yeah, I think that Walter wrote about two things, billiards and pool and chess. Chess is a very cerebral, competitive game, and it shows you what a talented author Walter Tevis was, that he took a young girl and set the world on edge about, and people don't know how to play chess. Anya Taylor-Joy, Beth Harmon, she didn't know how to play chess, but she memorized every game. Every move was choreographed. And so it really was a project of excellence. But what really drives it, I think it's a redemption story of a nerdy girl that wins.
That's right. Everybody likes a feel-good story.
There you go.
And you're doing so much to encourage the love of reading. Your purpose in life, like so many of us, is to encourage more people, Americans, people all over the world, to read. What can all of us do as parents, as teachers, to guide our young people towards our libraries, towards books, towards writing, reading, arithmetic, understanding?
Great question. And I'm a retired AP English language teacher, so I dealt with frustrated parents for many years. And I think the best thing a parent can do with their children is to model reading. Nobody, if you tell a kid you need to read but you don't read, why would they read? Because they're antagonistic to begin with. So model reading, just in a long car trip, somebody pull a book out and start reading it. Kids need to see what it looks like for an adult to read.
Yeah, and we can worry about the banned books, but we also worry about who's reading the books that are not banned.
Hey, how many people have actually read Ulysses in Florida in the last 10 years? You don't need to ban Ulysses. It's boring. High school kids don't read James Joyce.
Yeah. I just heard Allie say, Allie, you have something to add to this conversation?
Yes, my grandmother used to read to us when we would travel, and then stop, and we would discuss it, so it helped a lot.
Well, Casey, it's just lovely. It's just a wonderful program to have him on, because we learned things that we hadn't learned before. And I am fascinated by all these books and the authors and learning to play chess. I want to learn how to play.
Oh, it's fascinating. And once you learn and you start realizing how many people really do play chess, you're going to have the best conversations ever. Better than the gym.
I can see myself cooking my curry chicken over a game of chess.
I'll be over.
Maybe we'll have Casey come over when my Persian friends come over, because they play chess a lot in Iran. In Turkey.
If I drive over here for the show, I'll drive over for the good cooking.
All right. We'll have to do that one day.
Well, once again, another fantastic edition here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, each and every Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Casey, thank you so much for being with us.
Let him give his website.
Yes, what's your website?
www.caseycoarshow.com. I'm easiest to find on Facebook under A Celebration of Words.
Yes, and I will make sure that all of this information gets out on our websites as well as all of our social media. And once again, thank you all of your great listeners here for tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We will talk to you next week here, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on 1510 WWBC.